Good evening. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, and this is In the Motherhood for Wednesday, March 17th, 2021. My name is Robin Fadden. I'll be your host tonight on In the Motherhood, a parenting show on CKUT. And on today's show, we're talking about The Secret Mountain, a musical children's book publisher based in Montreal. And they recently celebrated their 20th anniversary. And that song I just played is a song from a new book from The Secret Mountain called Sing Out. And it's performed by Sin and Swoon, who is a duo based here in Montreal. And yeah, so that song is available from The Secret Mountain. You can find out about them on thesecretmountain.com, as well as on Facebook and on Instagram at Secret Mountain Publishing. So I spoke with the founder and publisher of The Secret Mountain, Roland Stringer, about the Quebecois music that inspired him to start the company in the first place about 20 years ago, and some of the authors and musicians that they've worked with over the years, and what books are new this year for The Secret Mountain. So you can listen to that interview right now here on CKUT. Thanks for listening. I'm speaking with the publisher of The Secret Mountain, which is the English imprint of La Montagne Secrète here in Montreal. It's a Montreal independent publisher. Welcome to the show, Roland Stringer.
Hello.
I'd first like to talk about the beginnings of The Secret Mountain. It started 20 years ago. That's why we're celebrating the 20th anniversary. But what inspired you to start not only a children's literature publishing house, but a musical children's literature publishing house? That seems like doubling the efforts of publishing.
The beginning, the very beginning, goes back to a garage sale in NDG. It's simply a Saturday morning. I'm walking at that time. My children, I have three kids, and they were small, young, very small. And we were just bopping around NDG, checking out garage sales. They were looking for toys and stuff. And of course, I fell upon always interested in old vinyl records, books, etc. And I fell upon this vinyl of Gilles Vigneault, who had recorded for children. He had recorded, he made an album back in the early 1970s, I believe, which was this real mix of nursery rhymes that he had composed, songs, little short stories. Anyway, I just thought, oh, wow, Gilles Vigneault did something for kids. And so I grabbed it and brought it back home. We started playing it in the basement, and it became very quickly kind of a go-to, a moment at the end of our day where we'd throw the vinyl on and we'd listen to this recording with the kids. And it was a lot of fun because there was some danceable songs on there. There was all of Vigneault's imagery and poetry. So it was very, you know, kind of in a certain way, you know, as I listened to it, I just thought, well, this is completely in sync with even what we're living today. Like, it doesn't feel dated in any way. At the same time, it was recorded in the early 70s. So in terms of the production value, it was like just, you know, very basic from and kind of like a bit ear, you know, there's points you go like, oh God, you know, that's, it would be nice to hear something, maybe a bit cleaner sound in terms of the arrangements. There was, you know, the strong structure was there, but in terms of the musical arrangements, it wasn't, you could feel that it was dated basically. So, having worked in the music business before, earlier, and I was in the music business at the time, I just thought, well, it'd be great to kind of go back into studio and record these again and do them. And so that is the beginning. We went back, we invited a bunch of singers, singer-songwriters, Richard Desjardins, Daniel Lavoie, Linda Lemay. And that became our very first publication, Un Trésor dans mon jardin. And at that time, there was no desire to set up a record label or a publishing house. It was really just that first project to kind of do that and have fun with it. We put it out and the response was wonderful. It did really well. It sold well. It got extremely well. It got good reviews. It just kind of happened at the right time. When we packaged it, you know, I was interested again because, you know, Vigneault is just as much, we know him so much as a songwriter, but he's very much a poet. He's a writer of stories. And so, you know, in preparing this project, we approached an illustrator, Stéphane Jorisch, who's one of our, who's had a wonderful career as an illustrator internationally and lives here in Montreal. And so Stéphane kind of brought us into kind of kids' literature in a way, because he had spent so much experience illustrating children's books. And we really liked that part of it too. You know, we kind of felt like, well, this is pretty cool too, to have all these, you know, kind of really have this graphic approach to the music and to this, the, those short stories. So that's the starting, that's the beginning point. And then, you know, and then the rest is sort of history. We just moved from one project to the next and started building. We continued, of course, to work with Gilles Vigneault. We, over the past 20 years, we've published 5 of his books. We've translated some of his stories into English. And then, of course, you know, we've gone in many different directions since. But that's the beginning. That's the starting point. It's a garage sale in NDG.
And it's such an exciting beginning, too, to get all those artists together. No wonder you wanted to keep doing it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun in so many ways, because when we invited the artists, we really wanted different voices, you know, going from Richard Desjardins to Linda Lemay, you know, to musical worlds that are just so different. And kind of the way it evolved was very much a tribute to Gilles Vigneault, is that everyone got on board really quickly. Everyone just was like, oh yeah, I'm in right away. It was interesting from that standpoint too, that we have very, you know, a wide array of Quebecois voices on that first album. And that's been a big part of what we've continued to do since. Quebecois, you know, in the large sense of course, Francophone singers, but Francophone singers from different cultures, different parts of Canada, from Europe, but also we've worked a lot with musicians from all over the world that call Montreal home, that come from Africa, from Spain, from Mexico, from, you know, so there's that. As the publishing house grew, we were able to widen that and really delve into, explore the rich musical community that we have here in Montreal that is so diverse. And, you know, and this is already 20 years ago. So it's way before the whole, you know, discussing diversity and that we should have diversity in children's books. Or it was, you know, way, way, way before that, when the idea was just to bring a lot of really creative and talented people together around the same project.
That's exactly what I was going to comment on. It's such a great way to introduce children, whether they're Francophone or Anglophone, to the diversity in Quebec and Quebecois culture. Absolutely, especially in Montreal's part of Quebecois culture too. And that's often, you know, I'm thinking about myself living in an Anglophone household with a bilingual kid, you know, who's, you know, he's in school, he sees, you know, all that Quebec has to offer. But he doesn't always get that kind of Quebecois past and present culture. But something like this seems so perfect for my music loving child. You know, I can see him loving the Gilles Vigneault album.
Absolutely. You know, the thing is that, of course, we always say it, but we must never forget it, is that kids at square one, they're open to everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would add that there's diversity in terms of the cultural, you know, we've tried to open up culturally, but musically as well, jazz, classical, various musics from different parts of the world, that there's an openness there. And I have to also say that it's refreshing for us as adults, because often we find, whether you're in literature or you're in music, is that very quickly our creators, they're kind of told, well, you have to, you know, like if you're doing a certain type of novel, if you're into fantasy, well, you should only write fantasy, you know, and you shouldn't break out of that. And same thing musically, if you do jazz, well, you're a jazz man and or a jazz woman, and you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't break out of jazz. And with The Secret Mountain, you know, that was, it kind of, again, it grew on us. It's not like we had a plan when we started, but as we moved into this, we said, well, Jesus, yeah, this, you know, this project's going to be really very, very jazz oriented, or let's go classical on this, or let, and kids are at, again, they're at the starting point, and they don't have those preconceived ideas of that, oh, classical music is snotty, or jazz is only for someone who really understands music and can play it. And they just go into it and say, you bring it on, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And music is such an amazing way to understand cultures too, as you pointed out. Yes, it's a universal language, especially for children. Yeah, there's no preconceived, oh, jazz is this and classical music is this. I mean, I was looking at the titles and, you know, an introduction to Mozart, the new titles you have, the series Using a Little Mouse. And it's funny because my kid is doing piano lessons and the books he's using have Mozart Mouse is, you know, the high keys and, you know, the high sound. So I was like, oh, it's perfect. I need to get that for him. So I wanted to talk a bit about creating content for children specifically. And it can be rather an endeavor because it's sort of a balance between educational and storytelling and meeting different age levels where they're at. What's your approach to children's literature plus children's music and putting that together?
Obviously, as you gain experience and you learn a lot of things along as you go, as a publisher in the beginning, I certainly wouldn't think, you know, sit down and go like, oh, is this a 3 to 5 year old project or is this a 5 to 7? And over time, especially because of the marketing forces and how we deal with it at a marketing, you know, from marketing standpoint, and many librarians, many educators want to know that information from the get-go. So certainly over the years, it has influenced to a certain degree how we go about putting together a project. We're maybe a little bit more careful, but I would say it's actually kind of, you know, in the beginning, it's a brainstorming, let the creative juices go and try and avoid thinking too much about all of that. Because we've also noticed with many of our publications that we'll have parents that come to us and say, oh, my child is just 2 years old and listens to this, and I read this story and listen to these songs and just loves it. And you know, and I'm in the back there thinking, yeah, well, we put on the marketing guide, we put 7 to 9 years old for that one, you know, and here, and then you'll have the opposite, you know, and because it's so unique, what we do of blending music with storytelling is that sometimes the music can bring you back to a younger age group or vice versa. So you'll have, you know, older children that will go, well, they get into the story and then they're more open to maybe listening to music that maybe is a bit that they'll find like, okay, it's kind of for my little brother. It's not necessarily for me, but I really like the story. So you know what? I can kind of get into the music too. So, you know, you're going back and forth, but certainly I'd say writing and creating for children, when you know you do have to be aware of kind of where the books, where the music, where they're going, and address that. We feel, you know, there's certain things that we've took that personally I feel strong about. I'm of the school that it's, you know, that you want to challenge the child. You want to make it exciting and you don't want to be completely over the child's head, but you want to challenge them. So you want to, in terms of vocabulary, sometimes putting a big word or 4 or 5 syllables in there, it's not necessarily bad. It can be, you know, remember a child is going back to the book 5, 6, 10, 15 times. And in the beginning, and also the relationship between the reader, sometimes the parent, the educator, who explains the words, who, you know, so we're certainly not of the, because there is pressure to dumb down and say, oh, at this level, they won't understand this. So we're not going to, you know, we're afraid that it's going to kind of stall the process, the children's learning, reading process. Personally, that's, you know, I'm going the other end and saying, let's risk it. Maybe sometimes we do blow it, you know, maybe sometimes we are too far ahead, but the risk is more interesting, I think, from a long-term standpoint as a publisher. And I'm speaking also as a parent. That's what I wanted when my kids were young. And I think that most parents, that's at the end of the day, they want their children challenged because, you know, it's so tied to the learning process, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you add music to what they're to their, you know, their world, it is a whole other language. And it's not necessarily one that you have to start from scratch because there's an innate musicality to children, right? So you never know what they're going to connect with.
So true. So true. You know, I mean, that's part of the excitement around publishing for children is to see the effect.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. So I wanted to talk, get into a bit about what is the process of Secret Mountain's publication of a book plus the music, the CD that goes with it. Because you're not only creating a book with authors and publishers, authors and illustrators, but you're recording and publishing music as well. How does that work? It's very different than the traditional publishing. Yeah.
Well, there's no formula.
Okay.
Because we're doing both, if you wish. We're functioning very much as a hybrid company somewhere, as a record label and as a publishing house. Every project is somewhat different. You know, sometimes the process will start with a story, and then we'll bring in, you know, it can be the storyteller or the author will work with a songwriter, and then we'll build music around the story and then bring in illustrations at the third level. Other times it'll be the exact opposite. We'll have these songs and then we'll go, well, geez, it'd be cool to have a story that would go with this song, these songs, where there's a concept here. I think of, you know, we have a series of world music, three titles called Dream Songs, Night Songs, and music from around the world with musicians that now live in Montreal, but that come from all over the world. And that's a case where we started really with the music. In some cases, some of these musicians would come in with songs that their mother, their parents had sung to them and that they wanted to record. So we basically had all the songs first, and then created a story about travel and discovery around the world that kind of tied in the songs. We've done really all kinds. We did a book called The Fabulous Song with Marie-Louise Gay and Don Gilmore, where the actual picture book had already been published. It just was crying out for music to go with it. It's a story about a boy who basically doesn't want to, his parents want him to learn an instrument, and he just keeps refusing and refusing. And this is a case where we went and obtained the rights from the publisher, and then we added music to it. So there's really no, you know, it really depends. And sometimes it's someone will come in with, you know, half the story, an idea for a story, but then already has ideas for the music as well. But in both cases, not necessarily the full sense of what the project should be. It really, every project is different. It really depends on whether it's something that's initiated by our team or something that's being presented to us from the outside.
Right. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, so because I was wondering about, you know, when you're working with like an ensemble of musicians and how do you direct them to, you know, create, whether they're creating the music themselves, whether they're playing music that's being composed for them.
Yeah, you know, we are just in the process. We're publishing this spring a collection of two titles, a new classical music series. It's called Little Stories of Great Composers. And we recorded the chamber orchestra, I Musici de Montréal. There's, you know, 20 musicians. Yeah, that was a whole process again that took, because there was Anna, Gerhard, who's the author. Marie LaFrance, who's the illustrator, was involved very early in that process. So we also had kind of an idea of what she was thinking of graphically. And then Jean-Marie Zaitouni, who conducted and directed the orchestra, was also very very close, especially with Anna. So you need dialogue when you have these kinds of projects, and everyone has to accept. It's very, I think, you know, one point that's different from other publishing houses is you'll have very much, you know, the author will come in and then eventually work with an illustrator, but it's very much about how we support the author. In the case of The Secret Mountain, everyone has to kind of take a step back, you know, and everyone is working with, you know, in French we say au service de l'autre, you know, for the other. So the illustrator is really there for everybody else, and the conductor is there for the author and the illustrator, and everyone has to compromise to a certain extent. But it's easy because everyone goes into the project with that in mind anyway. So, but that certainly is part of the process, you know, of the way we put these together. I think again with Gilles Vigneault, it was very much like that too, you know, where he would, you know, I would discuss with him the different singers that would come on board. But, you know, once you have someone like Richard Desjardins who comes on board, he has his style of singing and his approach. Well, the author has to accept, you know, he's going like, well, geez, that doesn't sound, I never thought the song would sound like that, you know? So it demands a bit of like, but that's kind of what this is about, you know?
I was thinking about that, you know, with the some of the Anglophone or bilingual musicians that you bring on, like Patrick Watson or Martha Wainwright, who have, you know, they're like auteur, you know, people expect a certain sound from them. And so, yeah, how much can they just be themselves and how much are they, you know, creating music for an author? Yeah.
I think another thing that's really on that, say, if we talk about like Patrick Watson, Martha Wainwright, Coral Egan, you know, Karen Young, wonderful Montreal musicians, singers, songwriters that have worked on our projects, is that it's for children. And they all have their adult career. So they're going into it in a certain way. There's an openness there too, that they're not like, there's an image and an identity as a performer that they have to defend. They're more open. You know, I've seen this many times on the French side with younger, you know, I think of songwriters like Ariane Moffat, Pierre Lapointe, that have a very clear, distinct, like Patrick Watson, Martha Wayne, very clear, distinct image in the pop rock world. But when they come into these projects for children, well, they kind of go like, well, no, this is about the kids, you know, this is about, so I found, you know, just an enormous amount of generosity from an artistic standpoint, where they're really willing to let go, you know, and be to a certain extent, you know, I have, of course, tons of stories of different, I think of the young, well, relatively young Dumas, the singer-songwriter who, you know, has very much his image and his identity, but coming into the studio and kind of singing it and then in a certain way and then saying, you know, I can sing it differently. And then he'd take a whole different voice and do it in a whole other way and going, what do you think works best, you know? And really not feeling totally unabashed and totally kind of like, kind of in terms of the concept, what works best, you know, these are songs that are linked to stories. So what works best for the story?
Yeah, that's interesting. The ego, the rock star ego, or whatever, the folk singer ego, is dropped for this kind of project. It must be so exciting for everybody involved to get to see that, you know.
Is Japanese. See her fingers dance with ease, playing notes on the koto. Friends from Spain come by for tea, and they all play the guitar. Yes, the boy is quite bizarre, but he sings so beautifully. There's a woman you can see in a pure white kimono, be tied up in the bow, strumming on her bouzouki. Let me tell you about your she, fingers dancing on the harp, has a pond of swimming carp, just don't say the word sushi. Gave a concert oh so zen, and just as they stood and bowed, three notes lifted from the crowd, played upon a chamizen. Attendance you can see, Buddhist statues made of bronze, Buddhist monks in their sarongs, meditating silently. Then, for hours, not a sigh, not one single note was heard, not one single whispered word. Will it be like this all night? At the final midnight gong, from the forest comes a cry. It's an owl perched up high, hoo-hoo-hooting all night long. Then a mouse came out to see, stood on stage and gave a bow. Monks applaud, Buddha smiling happily.
That was a song called Sunday in Kyoto from the storybook music CD of the same name from The Secret Mountain. And that's that storybook music CD features songs by Gilles Vigneault and other artists like Patrick Watson and Coral Egan and Nadio and Thomas Hellman. And yeah, it's available from The Secret Mountain, thesecretmountain.com. And I'll just go right back into the interview with The Secret Mountain's publisher, Roland Stringer. Thanks for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. So yeah, I just wanted to get into like the new season of books. And how many books does The Secret Mountain usually create in a season, a year?
Well, we'll publish in a year, because the season, sometimes depending on the timing, will go, generally we have less in the spring, a little bit more in the fall. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll publish between 10 and 12 titles a year, French and English. So about a half dozen in each language. Right now we're in the thick of the spring season. We have a collection of composers with Musique de Montréal. We also, on that series, the stories are narrated by Colin Fuhr, who agreed and accepted our invitation to be a part of the project. So that was wonderful to have him involved. He did a great job. Brought it again elsewhere, you know, because in the beginning you're imagining these projects, and then as each one brings their color to the project, and Colm certainly added and then brought it to another level. We also have this spring, we've putting out a book CD called Sing Out of classical folk songs. So these are, you know, everything from This Old Man, She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, kind of these classic. They're performed by a duo out of Montreal called Sin and Swoon, just a wonderfully gifted team, a couple, both of them just great musicians and great singers. And for that, the source of, we went back to kind of folk songs, you know, they've existed, of course, for centuries, but really honing in on the kind of the Pete Seeger civil rights folkways recordings of the 1950s and 60s, when these songs kind of had a new life during that time. Her arrangements are different, but very folky. There's a lot of violin, there's accordion, there's, you know, really rich acoustic music, a little bit of electric in there, but overall, really trying to build off that vibe. And the illustrations are very much in a little bit retro as well. We also have a few titles from abroad, and we have in the spring a book CD coming out from Spain that was originally published in Spain, and it's called Music All Around, where we've gone back into studio here and we've recorded the narration of the story. But it's basically part of a new collection we're putting out that's called One Story, One Song. And so this is something that I was able to discover at a trade fair, but it comes out of Spain. It's a wonderful story, intergenerational story about a child who lives by the sea and hears the music of the sea, but then goes to visit her grandparents in the summertime and hears the music from the forest and then brings them together. So it's quite poetic and quite touching. We also have another title in the spring called Summer Moonlight Concert, which comes from China, from illustrator author Han Han. And it's a story about families all living in this huge apartment block and the power goes out. Of course, having lived the 1998 here in Montreal, I thought, well, this is going to definitely appeal to a lot of people because there's a big power shortage, except that it's summer. So the family that we focus on is a musical family. The father plays the erhu and the mother the accordion. And so they come down into the garden to play on that hot summer night because there's no power, no lights on. And of course, all the neighbors come down and follow, and they have a concert in the evening. And of course, it's a nice way to introduce music, the traditional erhu, and a little bit of traditional music from China through this book CD. And then, you know, in the fall, we've got a whole bunch of other things coming out, but we continue, you know, we have developed this line with a company in Paris, Didier Jeunesse, of global music. So music that focuses on, kind of gives you a picture of a certain region. So we have a title coming out in the fall that touches music, nursery rhymes, lullabies from East and Southern Africa. So it covers all of the Indian Sea, African Indian Sea, the islands of Reunion. But then we also go into on the continent, Kenya, Mozambique, and South Africa. So very lovely recordings that go with the book that's presents also a lot of in-depth, gives you the lyrics in the original language, but also a translation, but a lot of background information on these songs. Of course, these songs are, in many cases, they're songs that have existed for hundreds of years. They go back to times of slavery and times of hardship. We also see how the music moved, how the influences from the different colonial influence on the original, the music that was performed there pre-colonial, and the instruments. And so it's a lovely, it's called Songs on the Vanilla Trail. So that'll be coming out in September.
Wow, that sounds great. So when people have the book in front of them and they have the CD, is it recommended to put the CD on or the MP3 or whatever it might be and read the book, which can sometimes be hard with kids because there are lots of...
I get that question. I've had that question many, many, many times.
Yes. I imagine. And
I love it. The quick answer is whatever. There's no fixed, you know, some children are more attracted to the book or to the story. They'll go into the book and they may listen to the music a month later. Some families will take the CD out now you can download we offer a code to download the recordings, but, you know, get the music right away so they can have it in the car. and they'll listen to the music or the stories, the narrated stories in the car for months before they get to the book. Others will have both. And like you suggested, you know, maybe follow the leaf through the book as you listen to the recordings. I think it really depends on the context and it depends on the child. I would like to think that in some cases, your children that are more audio oriented, they want to, you know, we'll pull them into reading through the audio first, that they'll get into the music. And then finally, they're going to go, well, geez, I love these songs. And I wonder, what's that story? You know, there's that story that goes with the songs. What's that about? And then it will drive them to read the story. And vice versa, I think that children that are readers, you know, there's a whole music, one shouldn't exclude music from their world because they love to read. You know, we have this idea again that if you're a bookworm, oh, you know, you never come across music, or you shouldn't. So here, this, if that can open up that window, and that a child can say, well, wow, I love this story, and now I'm getting another layer through the music. It really depends. We obviously, when we're putting them together, we're thinking of the experience of them together. But, you know, once it goes out there, you have to kind of let it go and see where it takes you, you know, because sometimes you'll have a song that, you know, ends up on YouTube or somewhere, and then people will listen. You know, we've had comments. Sometimes people will show up at the Salon du Livre de Montréal, and they'll walk in front and they'll stare for a while, and then finally they'll go, "There's a book of that." I've been listening. Our kids and we've been listening like for 10 years. We've been listening to this music, and there's a book. You know, go, well, yeah, there is, you know.
Amazing. And then they have to buy it.
Yeah. And then, well,
how could you not? How can you not? That's amazing. I love that. Well, and so this leads me to my final question about ebooks and why you decided to create some enhanced ebooks, where I'm assuming the music and the story go together by virtue of the medium.
It's a good way to segue into the whole, you know, what we've been developing in terms of enhanced ebooks and audiobooks and, you know, whatever we want to call, because there's all kinds of different terms being thrown around. But certainly it's in a certain way, like certain with respect to, for instance, the iPad. When I saw the iPad arrive about 10 years ago, I thought, well, wow, this is great, because you even, you know, with a book CD, you still have to take the CD out and go plug it into a player, and then you've got your book, and then you've got your CD player, and you've got, whereas here with the iPad, you can get that enhanced experience. You can choose right away just through the touch, listen to the music, not listen to the audio, and yet get a quality in terms of the illustrations that is, you know, amazing. You know, the iPad screen was, for me, such an amazing thing when it came out, of the sheer quality of what it can give you. So we've explored that. We've invested heavily. We do ebooks, enhanced ebooks, where you have that mix where you can choose. You have songs that go with the story that are there right in. But we've also, in some cases, we've started putting out ebooks without audio, where there's the story, because our, should be pointed out that our audio is also on all of the music platforms. So we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Music. So there is that possibility now, for coming back to that person who came to the salon and said, well, what about the book? And we have the music. Well, it's the same thing online. You can access the music through Spotify, but if you want to enhance the experience, you may go purchase the ebook, but simply the ebook without the audio. So again, we're offering kind of this different formats, and we're letting the families, the educators, go into it in whichever way, depending, because everyone's right now, I think it's safe to say that it's all over the map in terms of, some people are on Kobo, some people are on Kindle, some are on iPad, Apple, some still, you know, it's use laptops to read or listen to music. Others, it'll be a tablet. We know in schools, you've got the whiteboards as well that have to be thrown into the mix. So, you know, we're kind of just creating in all these different formats as best we can to allow that it be accessible. But after that, you know, it really depends how, what they're working with, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a time and a place for, a physical book and an ebook. For sure.
Yes. Yeah. And I should add that we really embraced the digital, but in my view, it was always, I love books, physical books. I think that the object, the memory that is associated with a physical object, the notion of transmission, of gift giving, these books that you keep for a lifetime because they're associated to a moment in time. All of that is really important. And I think also books that with nice paper, that are nice to hold, so I never ever viewed it as, competing with digital, which is of course something that many it's more recently that's changed, but in the beginning there was book publishers felt quite threatened by digital arriving and thought, is this the end of our business model, and what do we do with that? From the get-go, because we were this kind of hybrid between the two, as a music producer, I saw Napster arrive in 1999. The idea of kind of protecting a format is not something that I was interested in. Really felt that, well, we're onto something new here anyway. And it's interesting because since then, of course, like we've seen vinyl come back to a lesser degree, but it has come back. And I think it is because it's great to hold, first off, the cover and then the actual vinyl to put it on the turntable. And, my kids that are now in their 20s, they romanticize this idea when I tell them that, when I was in my 20s, like we would just meet and sit down in the living room and play records, and each person someone would show up with a new record and play it. And, and then we'd all talk about that and discuss that. And now with digital, we're coming around to new ways of dealing with physical and coming back to some of the stuff that we lost kind of for a while. And I think that, of course, for children, physical picture books, it's between when parents read to their kids in bed, for instance. I mean, you can't beat that. I mean, there's something about turning the page and the child going and saying, no, but I'm not done with the previous page here. I want to go back to this part. You can't on an iPad or on a computer, a laptop, you can't reproduce that interaction between parent and child.
Yeah, it's not quite the same. And it's nice to have some screen-free time sometimes with your kid in your house,
And there's that too. Certainly.
I mean, I do love screens myself, and I'm a huge movie and TV fan, and I think there's some great content out there for kids. But yeah, there's nothing like sitting down and reading a book, and with the addition of music, I can just see, just the mood, the ambiance, how music really can change your whole attitude, and I think for kids that's so important sometimes, just to help them work through some emotions, or just help them feel closer to their parents too, by creating this mood around you.
It's another dimension. The other thing about music is that sometimes you can have a sad lyric on a cheery melody or a cheery musical arrangement, so there's layers to it. And I think that that's interesting too, to explore. I think that that happens already in a picture book, between the association between the word and the illustration, mm-hmm. that the illustration sometimes can offset a text. If you read a text initially, sometimes you might say, oh, this is going to be really scary. Then the illustrator comes into the picture, and then it's like, well, it's still there, but there's something else happening. And I think with music, of course, that's yet again another interpretation. It brings it to another, just brings it elsewhere. And those are, I think that's interesting for the in terms of the relationship, the communion that can exist between parent and child, to kind of the discussions that can come out of that too. What can appear to be scary, but is part of life and therefore shouldn't necessarily be scary, even if it is a source of worry at certain points in one's life, you know. So I think all of that is it's interesting when you kind of mix it, bring it together. But it's also really what I find fascinating about picture books on their own, the illustrator's take on the words and vice versa.
Yeah. And it really is something that sparks conversation. My kid right now is very into scary music. In, you know, if he hears some scary music on a YouTube video or something like that, he's like, "Ooh, it's scary, but the video is very silly." You know, so he loves that juxtaposition. Very, very into that. Not feeling fully scared, but maybe anticipating being scared.
Yeah. Well, I love that stuff because, I mean, again, you know, and I think as a child, and who didn't, the pleasure you get out of making yourself scared, the way you play with that, right? Of I'm scared, but I'm not. But I, oh yeah, look at this, is really scary. And I think that not only is it really a lot of fun, that's also part of the development and learning, you know, and what the different stages that a child goes through. We put out a series of four books called Introduction to Classical Music. And again, it's Anna Gerhard is the author. She was the author of this collection as well. They came out in the past four titles in the past 10 years. And Anna had chosen like these themes, right? So one of them is called Listen to the Birds, and it's everything about how composers either tried to imitate a bird sound or they were inspired by a bird to create a character, or, you know, just all related to birds. And then she did another one, you know, called Amazing Water, around the theme of water, rivers, fountains, the sea. But she has her most recent one is called Little Creatures, and it's about insects and snakes and frogs and you know, a lot of it, wasps, and then goes and gets all these. And I remember the one about wasps, actually, when I did the presentation to our reps at IPG, they're out of Chicago, and I played, you know, this one piece, and one of the VP of sales came back to me after, and he says, "God, when I could just feel those wasps on me." And, you know, he says, "What a terrible feeling." And then he looked at me, he says, "My son's going to love it." Well, okay. Because initially I thought he was going to tell me something like, "We can't put this book out, you know, it's going to be too, you know, too much." He just said, "My son's going to love it." I said, okay, good.
Oh, well, that's great. Oh, I do actually have one more question. Because your communications person had said that the song or the poem, "I Know an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly," was written by a Montrealer. Is that true?
Yes, yes. Yay. Yeah, that's actually Alan Mills. And Alan Mills had a folk show. He was a wonderful singer. Had a national folk show on CBC Radio in the 1950s. And he performed in many venues. He was actually, many consider that kind of in terms of the you know, the folk movement that, and, you know, with Ian and Sylvia and Bruce Coburn and everything, that kind of the granddad is Alan Mills. He was like kind of our first folk singer. He recorded for Folkways Records out of New York and performed in the U.S. a lot, you know, Carnegie Hall and very many different things. He was also, it was interesting because he was in Montreal and he was accompanied by Jean Carignan, which is probably the, considered for anybody who's followed Quebecois violin players, Jean Carignan was the king. He was like this, you know, he drove the taxi by day, but he performed at night, and he toured with Alan Mills. "I Know an Old Lady Swallowed a Fly" became extremely popular. He had written many songs for kids, and he had made an album that he Folkways Records. And that song just took off to the point where no one even registered that he was the singer-songwriter. So everyone thinks it's traditional. Everyone thinks that the song is like 200 years old. I found out just by kind of delving into Folkways Records and realized that, okay, he had written, he had put out this album. And then I realized in the credits that it was, the lyrics are by this a British woman, Bond Rose, and the music is by Alan Mills. And so I dug deeper. I found out that there was like about 30 boxes of archives in Ottawa that Alan Mills and his family had donated. And I was able many years ago to hook up with his manager of the time, which is a man named Sam Gesser, who had a huge career as a promoter producer here in Montreal at the Place des Arts. Was the first to bring Nana Mouskouri and brought, just was very involved in arts and in music here. So I met Sam, and Sam kind of cued me in. He says, oh yeah, you have to go check this out in the archives, all of this. So we came back. We went, I found a bunch. Anyway, we came back with about 75 kids' songs by Alan Mills, and we worked through that, and we selected 15 of them. And of course, the main, you know, I was going like, well, we've got to kind of like, I know an old lady's got to be like front and center to this, because, you know, I'm going to make it my mandate that it was written by a Montrealer. It's not a traditional song. So, you know, and then after that, Thomas Hellman got involved in the project. Paul Campagne produced it. So we have this album called I Know an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly, but the album is underneath the subtitle is Songs by Alan Mills. And there are it's not only I Know an Old Lady, you can discover all of his other songs. He was a really funny. What I like about it too is he, like I Know an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly, we kept the original. You know, remember that in the original, well, she swallows a horse at the end and she dies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's classic Alan Mills humor. It was always poking fun. I can just see him. You'll see a lot of the songs are like that, where just at the end of what happens, oh, well, she's gone. Next, move to the next song. And so we tried to keep that spirit in terms of when we selected the songs, as they're kind of kooky. There's a lot of nonsense. In a certain tradition, Gilles Vigneault is very much like that in French, but Alan Mills, where it's like, you know, the real kooky nonsense songs that sometimes he'll go, you know, he doesn't, an alphabet song that we've recorded, but he's left out, and I won't tell you the letter, so hopefully someone will have to go figure it out. But he does an alphabet song, and there's one letter that he's left out. Vintage Alan Mills, yeah. You know, that was his kind of like, I'll do it, because, and I can just see him probably doing it live in front of like a bunch of kids, and having them all holler the letter that was left out, you know, and how dare he leave it out, you know, so.
Exactly. Oh, well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for talking with me about the Secret Mountains past and present and everything in between. It's been really fascinating and fun.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. That was an interview with the publisher of The Secret Mountain, a musical children's book publisher based here in Montreal, and they recently celebrated their 20th anniversary. And I'm going to play another song from one of their books, a classical one this time, to end the show. But if you'd like to know more about The Secret Mountain's books that have come out this year, that have come out in previous years, you can go to thesecretmountain.com. You can also find them on Facebook, and they're on Instagram as Secret Mountain Publishing. I think they may be doing a giveaway right now of books. You can check on that and on their website too. So thank you for listening to In the Motherhood this month on CKUT. You can email us at inthemotherhood@ckut.ca. You can also find us on Facebook at CKUT-InTheMotherhood. So let us know what you're thinking, anything about parenting that's going on for you as a parent or grandparent or aunt, uncle, anything. You can email us or send us a message on Facebook. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next month.
Bonsoir et bienvenue à Amandla, votre émission hebdomadaire sur l'Afrique ici à CKUT 90,3 FM à Montréal. Alors aujourd'hui, j'ai eu l'opportunité et le privilège de parler avec Chérif Diouf, qui est le coordonnateur canadien du PASTEF. C'est une parti politique au Sénégal. Sénégal est en train de vivre une période très, très difficile, très mouvementée, tourmentée. Alors, j'ai pu poser à M. Diouf quelques questions par rapport aux plateformes politiques du PASTEF, puis comment eux, ils voient créer vraiment une différence, un futur différent pour les Sénégalais et les Sénégalaises. Alors, restez à l'écoute d'Amandla, ici à Sécurité 90,3 FM.
I'll just do a little intro in English because today we're going to focus en français sur les questions de Sénégal. But I did find a small clip 7 minutes later in the program about Sénégal with the Amnesty International coordinator that